So this is a kind of a special show. It was really recorded in a variety of different points. Usually I record my shows on Saturday before the Sunday and on the Thursday afternoon before the Thursday evening. But in this case, the power went out, and so we have about an hour of interviews and discussions from an old Union of the Homeless meeting about a week ago, not that old, actually, and from the showing of The Public, the film The Public, when there were presentations and discussions by Keith McHenry and poet Linda LeMaster. You'll be able to hear that, as well as some musical selections, which I stole off the internet. And then there'll be some additional stuff that I'm adding today, today being the day the power actually was on for a full day, Tuesday the 29th, I think it is. Yeah, it is the 29th. So I hope that's clear. If it isn't, it probably doesn't make a lot of difference. What's really important is getting the voices of folks out there who had something to say and who are as much a part of this community as any of the rest of us, and indeed have lessons for the rest of us to learn, and hearts and mouths that need to be heard. So here we go. And I think the way I'm going to patch this together is I'm going to do this Monday recording, the Monday, I should say the Tuesday recording on the 29th, with essentially we're going to be listening to interviews from the street from an earlier time, but then we're going to be hearing the original beginnings of the Sunday show that I started to record but wasn't able to complete because of the power blackout. So you get bits and snatches, rags and patches, but enjoy. So I'm going to begin by going back to the 20th of October, when I began talking to some of the folks along the post office fence campground. I don't know what else to call it. I think it has another name, as I remember, or I've heard another name. Talked to a couple of folks who were either resident there or visiting people there, and a couple of the conversations.
The whole street cordon off.
When was this?
This was 11. The whole street cordon off.
When was this?
This was 11 o'clock.
This is like today?
Yeah.
What happened?
Well, I guess the guy, for some reason, went up in there the hillside there, and the cops surrounded, cordoned off the street and surrounded him. They were up on by the church, every side.
So where were you while you were watching
this? I was at the clock tower here watching, looking the hill.
How right. far away were you?
I was 50 yards watching him right there.
How many cops involved?
I think it was the whole police force. I swear, all of them. There were at least 10, 12 cop cars.
What do you think? Would you get any idea what was going on?
I think he was violent towards a police officer and then ran into the bushes. We know.
And without, I have no idea who they're talking about in this incident that happened a week ago. But I do note this. I've seen this tendency of this massive police overreaction. Many squad cars for, I don't know, a guy sitting next to a building or a smoking ticket. Or here we hear described, you know, somebody hitting a cop and running into the bushes. I don't know. I mean, we don't know actually what happened. But it seems to be an approach of using sort of massive force and terror to intimidate people from doing anything other than saying yes sir, three bags full to police officers and doing exactly what they say instead of challenging them in any way, which, frankly, is not healthy given the kind of ordinances these cops are enforcing.
Who it was?
I don't know who it was.
Here, I'd be curious. Any hassles in this tent? Or is this a place you sleep at night?
No. Yes, it is a place to sleep at night, but no hassles. The police came by and gave us a ticket for, blocking the sidewalk.
And that, of course, is the new camping ordinance substitute being used by police. And he's talking about his tent along the fence next to the post office on Water Street, which is a place where people began to gather several years ago before Chief Mills directed them to the San Lorenzo Park, which became a campground for that winter and actually served more than 100 people, similar to the Ross Camp, but in some respects more spacious, although I don't think they opened the bathrooms. They put in porta potties, and it was more centrally located. And it was a successful campground, although some people, of course, who don't want to see homeless anywhere in Santa Cruz, growled and yowled and snarled. Hasn't happened this year. San Lorenzo Campground remains closed at night, and you will face not just citations but stay-away orders and possible jail time if you end up going there repeatedly with your tent or your blanket. I think people do it anyway. But it's far riskier, and the war on the poor has, in essence, intensified because of all this. And there has been, again, as I said, there is a gathering of folks along the fence at the post office as a sort of the fallback place, because that's where the Food Not Bombs meal is on the weekends. And it's also a very broad sidewalk, so these blocking the sidewalk tickets are going to be kind of hard to defend in court, I would imagine, though I haven't followed any of them that have reached court, and often people just don't even bother to go to court because it's enough trouble keeping your stuff together during the day, having someone watch it so it doesn't get taken, getting to where you need to go to get food and other supplies and so forth. Here's more from the new campground along the fence.
And we had to move.
We had half the sidewalk.
Yeah, but we came back after that. We moved our stuff in and came back.
But and how long ago was that ticket?
2 days ago.
And was that regular cops, rangers?
That was the rangers and PD, city PD.
And have they passed by and ignored you since then, or just not been by?
They ignore us. They don't bother us now.
That's good. How many people do you estimate are here at night?
A little bit.
Ten people.
There'll be a lot more later on. Hey, later on there'll be a lot more.
Yeah, later at night.
Yeah.
You want to give your first name?
Daniel.
And you are?
Jimmy.
All right. Mind if I put this on the free radio stream?
Not mind.
Anything you want to add?
Nothing. I think that's it. Okay.
Thank you, man.
Thank you.
All right. Do you have a phone? Do you have phone access, by the way?
I don't have a phone.
Does anybody here on the street have a phone that you know of?
Well, Johnny right there has a phone.
And this has become important I felt it's important for a long time as a Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom activist group I work with meets every Wednesday at the Sub Rosa, 11 o'clock. Check it out. Because I think we need to establish connections with campgrounds so people can send in reports when their property is being taken by police, when they're being harassed by troll busters, when there are some emergency needs out there, when they just want to give a report on what's going on. And that kind of connection is hard because people have trouble charging their phones. Phones get stolen or lost regularly. It's not easy. But if people want to stay in touch, give a call to the Huff line at 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and leave your phone number, and I'll get back to you, and we'll start establishing a campground network if people are interested in doing that. Alicia Kuhl, the Santa Cruz County Homeless Advocates Facebook page, and the president of the Santa Cruz Homeless Union is also interested in doing that. The Homeless Union meets every Sunday, as you'll probably hear at other points on this broadcast. In fact, we'll be playing one of the earlier meetings at 5 o'clock on Sunday at the Food Not Bombs meal right next to the scene of the crime, the fence where the police and the rangers have found these ne'er-do-wells sleeping.
Is he here at night?
He's here now. Yeah.
Johnny, you have a phone here? I mean, are you?
Yeah, I have a phone.
If you want to give me your number, are you accessible tonight for a phone call to see what's going on?
Sure.
Let me make a note of it.
Okay.
And Johnny, as it turned out, doesn't stay there. He's a visitor, but not a resident. But I may get in touch with him anyway, since he seems to stay in touch with these folks.
With
John Silby.
And you've been doing this for 14 years.
Yeah.
Are we okay with this? Go ahead with this or not?
No, I ain't cool with it at all. Am I okay with this?
I'm okay with our talking about it.
Oh, yeah.
This is for the stream of free radio.
Absolutely. Okay. This is how anything that's going to be done in life has to be done with an agreement. You know what I mean? As you know, I can't do it by myself, and I don't think nobody can, really.
Yeah.
We all need
You're
help.
Right.
But if we don't pull together, like we're out here, we're nipping and picking at each other so bad we're broken up in a little group. If we don't stand together, we're going to fucking get ruined, man.
If we don't hang together, we'll all hang separately.
Right.
That's what my card says. So how long have you been in this location at night?
Well, here about 5 years now in this location. I've been here my whole life. About
in Santa Cruz.
Years. Yeah.
Okay. But what about in this particular spot on the sidewalk? How long have you been here?
No, actually, I don't. This is my spot. This is my buddy's spot.
You're just visiting.
I come to visit, yes.
Oh.
I come visit, bring good cheer and a good, you know, I always bring somebody up. I never put them down.
But, now, have you got another spot that you regularly sleep at? I'm not necessarily saying you should say where it is, but do you have a place that you normally sleep where there are other people sleeping or not?
No. No, I tend to sleep like on the side of O'Reilly's or some shit like that, by a business. Because I get up early and I leave. Safer that way. I'm under a lit area. You go out in the woods or something, or start camping, then they want to come and poke through all your shit. You know what I mean?
So last night, for instance, where'd you sleep, if you wish to say?
At a friend's house, actually.
Oh, that's nice. That's nice. So you got indoor accommodations at times.
If need be, yeah. If it's raining or something like that, I am blessed to have a place to go, yes. It's my brother's house, so. And I don't try to wear my welcome out either.
That
you
can
know.
Be touchy, I know that. That's what I hear, and that's what I imagine.
Well, yeah,
anyway.
And we don't always see eye to eye either, you know.
principal problems of being outside you found are
cold.
What?
Cold. Cold.
Yeah.
And safe. I don't like getting woke up by.
You see, you lost your last phone was through a theft.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that goes on a lot out here, man. Bike theft.
Has it increased much?
Terribly.
To what do you attribute this?
Narcotics.
More homeless, more drugs?
Narcotics, yeah. Yeah.
How about is there an increase in the number of folks outside, do you think?
God, yes. Yeah.
Have you seen that in the last couple years particularly?
In the last couple of years, what I've seen, what created so many people here, people come from somewhere else, you know what I mean? Just passing through, I guess, and you get stuck here for whatever reason. Come to Santa Cruz on vacation, leave on probation.
There
that's
that
the old saying, yes,
yeah,
I know.
Remember that one.
But it's almost true, man. You got to start believing in it after some point in time because a lot of people come here and they get stuck here due to whatever reason. But, yeah, in the last couple of years, I would say we've probably, man, a third more people homeless, and you know what I mean, on the streets than ever. And I guess in the last couple of years, what I've seen, the mindset towards homelessness has changed dramatically.
How so?
Well, because it's like, I don't want to say this, but it's like them and us. It's like the haves and have-nots. There's no more middle class or nothing. Either you're homeless or you have a home. But the people that have a home look like homeless, like we're fucking not supposed to be here. We don't have a right to be here. You know what I'm trying to say? I was born and raised in this fucking county. Oh, excuse my French. But know this. I was born and raised in this county, and I'm more of Santa Cruz than they'll ever be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But you know what I'm saying? The Bible says, don't judge or you will be judged. I don't know who's a Christian when it comes down to people judging you. But I'm a Christian, and I believe that we shouldn't judge each other, and that just alienates us, and it's you know what I mean? Bad. Bad seed right there. But anyway.
Anything you want to add?
God bless everyone. Have a good night.
And we've been talking with?
John.
Thank you, John. With?
John. So,
and you've been doing this for...
Raising taxes high as they can go. Right here, squeeze land. Don't think I have enough to pay and catch the bus. Living here in squeeze land. Can't afford to see a show, ain't got no radio. Squeeze land. Can't buy her child a coat, the gas prices made her broke. And she's living off grains of sand.
time when things were so fine, but for now I'm past and gone.
A man came to me bragging, said there's no end to the treasures I own. I said, well, are you free from your stress? What defines you? Honor is then live someone in the now they hide. Walls of gold protect them from a struggling world outside. Squeeze land, the triple digit price got people thinking twice. Squeeze land, afraid to see the mail, your house might be for sale. Squeeze land, the camera sees your face, they got your license plate. Squeeze land, and everybody's
little on nothing but a grain of sand.
Hey brother, tell me why you seem so down. He cries, Uncle Sam took my savings all away. Said, welcome to Squeeze Land.
Oh, hey.
Squeeze Land.
That was Kevin Robinson from his album, Song of the Same Name, Squeeze Land. Tip of the hat to Vision Song Valerie for turning me on to this performer and this particular album. Thanks. Thanks, Valerie. And here's a guy I ran into up in Felton, actually ran into me, crossed the road to talk to me, and here's what he said.
Okay, well, today is the 26th of October. It's around 11:30 in the morning. I'm talking with
Dave.
And Dave, you have a comment about something that's happened to you recently?
Yes, Take Back Santa Cruz. It's a white Dodge King Cab pickup, not a four-wheel drive, not a brand new one. And there's a redheadish-looking guy with a trim beard, with glasses, short, stocky, and he's skidding into homeless people and honking his horn. Even if I had a blinky light, I have my little dog in the basket and my front light, and the guy attempted murder, tried to kill me. So I figured when I see him coming out of a grocery store, getting in his truck or out of his truck, I'm going to beat the shit out of him, use his phone, call the cops, and get him arrested for attempted murder.
Regarding Take Back Santa Cruz as a sort of a moniker, I never quite found out why he specifically identified this guy with the group Take Back Santa Cruz, formed by people like Pamela Comstock down in Santa Cruz, which actually elected people to the city council in Santa Cruz and is notorious among homeless folks as a hostile hate group against homeless folks. It's an online group. You can't get into it very easily, or and if you do, you can easily get kicked out of it. It has a much broader membership than simply anti-homeless people. It masquerades as a public safety, presents itself. Let's try to be, I don't know, I don't want to say give them the benefit of the doubt, because I think it's become clear what they are over the years, but they see themselves as a public safety group concerned with, needle disposal, proper needle disposal, shoring up the police and increasing their budget and increasing the number of laws that criminalize, make it easier for the police, give them tools, as the police like to say. Anyway, in this interview, I didn't actually get the specifics as to why he specifically identified this with Take Back Santa Cruz. And was there a Take Back Santa Cruz bumper sticker on the car that he said nearly hit him? I don't know.
That's all I got to say about that today.
And when did this happen, man?
About 2 months ago, but he's done it to several friends, and they describe the same guy.
And when was the last description of an event that happened of this kind?
Actually, about 3 weeks ago.
And what's the name of your dog?
Maggie May. Everybody in Santa Cruz knows her.
If you want to say who you are, you've been remaining anonymous.
Yep, so I'm Dave Johnson and Maggie May Johnson. And
you have your bike with you, Dave?
Yep, I always do. I just got to go get her basket now. We're tired of walking up here in the hills.
You're outside these days?
Absolutely, for 12 years. And I have nothing against nobody, but these guys got to go, man. There's something's going on here.
Where did these incidents happen?
They happened on Soquel Avenue, on Freedom Boulevard, everywhere. They're all over. This guy, I think, lives in Aptos or Soquel, because I see him coming towards the flea market from Soquel area. About 5:30, crack of dawn in the morning, about 3 months ago, I seen him. But my friend got hit about 2 weeks ago. He didn't get hit, but he almost hit the guy. And they wake you up at Santa Cruz Bible. They lied to me and said they are custodian. I know every employee there. And she just, I go, why are you lying in God's house? And she still told me she's going to call the cops.
Why did she wake you?
Because they're with Take Back and say, they do it. They almost ran me over once another car. I can't describe it because it was pitch dark and I just woke up.
You were outside?
Yeah.
Around the Bible Church.
Yeah, around down the street from the Bible Church, same area.
This is in Santa Cruz City or outside?
Santa Cruz City, right by the harbor, off Frederick Street.
And how is being in Felton and the county compared to the city?
Felton's a lot better, but you got your bike thieves, your night thieves everywhere, the tweakers. But, you know, that's why I come up here, to get away from the circus of Santa Cruz. And that's why I'm up here. Came up here last night.
And how are the deputies treating you in that regard?
Oh, they all know me. They all know me by first and last name, but they're cool to me. They know I don't have a warrant, but they know I will have one, so I got court next month. Anyways, you have a good day.
And we've been talking with?
Dave Johnson.
Thanks, Dave.
So, again, I don't know how far this netcast is going to go out, because this is being done sort of as an irregular archive, and I'm hoping it'll be played a number of times on the net. And who knows, someday maybe on the radio. But if you yourself experience any of these concerns or see them happening, homeless people being harassed or threatened or abused in any way, please call to the Huff line at 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and leave me a report. You can also come to the Union of the Homeless meeting, 5 o'clock, at the Food Not Bombs meal on Sundays. That's at the main post office. Or you can check out the Conscience in Action /Huff meeting, which is kind of one meeting leads into the other, at the Sub Rosa Cafe every Wednesday at 11 o'clock next to the Bike Church. Next up, we have an audio of the harm reduction group's press conference that they held at the town clock. It happened simultaneously with a Conscience in Action meeting that I was at, so I couldn't get to it. But Fox did, and she did this recording. So this harm reduction press release, press conference, I guess, begins with Danny, whose last name I'm damned if I remember, and I've been able to find it online, but he's an outspoken guy, and here he is, as well as the rest of the press conference.
The work we do can sometimes be very isolating. Folks here who have been involved with this kind of thing know what I'm talking about. And as someone who has spent 7 years of my life in this town as a young teenage addict, it can be really hard sometimes to come to terms with the amount of hatred that people who use drugs face in our world. And I hold a lot of grief for that as I stand up here. But that is why it is so tremendous to see all of you here supporting this work and supporting the people it is centered around. Moments like this give me the energy to keep at this, no matter how hard it is sometimes. This large of a turnout on such short notice shows that what we have been saying all along. Programs like the one we are programs like the one we are proposing have both broad and deep support in this community, right? And thank you to those from the media who took the time to be here today. We appreciate the opportunity to put our message out there right from the start of this process.
And I believe what they're talking about is getting official certification from the state so they can distribute needles. Maybe they may have a nonprofit status already, I don't know. They attempted to get this certification before, but were shouted down by the Take Back Santa Cruz needle-waving mob. Or at least that was the impression I got 3 or 4 months ago. And they really have kind of taken a step back in terms of not pushing for needle injection. Harm reduction centers that involve injection and inhalation centers, as are being considered in some cities, even as close as San Francisco. Here they are, and here's some more.
So how this is going to work, I'm going to say a bit about the application. I'm going to read some statements from folks that wanted to be able to speak today and weren't able to make it. And then we're going to have a series of speakers before me and Kate answer questions for 15 minutes from the audience and the media. So what does it mean that we are applying? The short version is that we're about to begin a 3.5 month long process in which we ask the California Department of Public Health to certify us to run a needs-based syringe services program. CDPH is the most powerful and important public health body in the state, and we greatly appreciate them providing such a straightforward way for us to set up a program like this one. And why are we applying? Because despite the tireless efforts of our friends at the County Health Services Agency, there's still unmet need in this county. Our county syringe service program uses a restrictive one-for-one exchange model. Their hours are limited, and they aren't able to provide services outside of a fixed location. This has led to a lot of people without access to clean syringes or anywhere to dispose of them. And it's even left people overdosing with no naloxone nearby to reverse it. We are applying to fill those gaps in service with a compassionate, volunteer-run, and peer-centered program. And as many of you know, this is the second time we are applying this year. We filed a similar but distinctly different application this spring. And after a huge public debate, we decided to withdraw it so that we could better incorporate community feedback into our proposed program. We have taken our time with this new application. We've had countless conversations, first and foremost, with our program participants, but also with organizations, elected officials, allies, and opponents. We are reapplying after a whole lot of work has been done to bring the community along with us. In the spring, we had proposed locations in Santa Cruz, Watsonville, and Felton. This new application includes no locations in Watsonville and Felton. The only location in this application is one in Santa Cruz. It's the same one we have been providing syringe services at for almost 18 months by obtaining supplies from our county's existing program. Instead of the Felton and Watsonville locations, we have decided to offer home delivery services throughout the county of Santa Cruz. That means we will be bringing supplies straight to private residences. Looking at the data held by the county SSP, you can see that between May 2018 and May 2019, we collected and disposed of thousands more syringes than we distributed. This new program will continue that trend. We have consistently been called a needle giveaway and been accused of increasing needle litter, despite the fact that programs like the one we are proposing are the single best way to remove used syringes from this community. It makes sense why people think that we add the syringe litter, but they have it backwards. You want to mess with the volume? Is that better?
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yell at us.
And the last thing I want to say about the application is that we will continue our commitment to not provide syringe services at any city or county parks. So, on Monday, we informed the County Board of Supervisors and the City Councils of Santa Cruz, Capitola, Watsonville, and Scotts Valley of our intention to submit this application. We'll be working closely with our allies in government and the world of public health to keep building and demonstrating our support throughout this process. We are making ourselves entirely available to meet and work with members of our community who have concerns about this program. And above all, we'll be working with our participants to ensure the program we build serves them as best as possible. Thank you. Again, thank again, just thank you all so much for being here. Okay, the next couple of things I'm going to read off real quick are statements from folks that couldn't make it but really wanted to show their support today. And how's the audio? Am I audibly legible? Good, that would suck if you couldn't catch all of that. Okay, the first statement is from Vice Mayor of the City of Santa Cruz, Justin Cummings. Justin writes, "Dear friends, colleagues, and community members, we all agree that there is a big crisis going on around addiction in our city and county. There are many ideas about what we should do about this crisis and how we can go about improving the health of our whole community. I support strategies that are rooted in research, evidence, and compassion. That is why I support harm reduction as one of the many approaches we need to be taking to address the crisis. Syringe exchange and overdose prevention programs are proven to reduce the spread of disease, reduce deaths caused by overdose, reduce needle litter, and help people who use drugs find treatment. They do all of this while treating people who use drugs with compassion and respect. That's why I support these kinds of programs. I support the County Syringe Services Program, and the Harm Reduction Coalition of Santa Cruz County is proposing a program that can help provide additional quality services in our community. Given that harm reduction is something that will require a community approach to address addiction and provide services, I support the Harm Reduction Coalition of Santa Cruz County's application to run a certified syringe exchange program, and I support their mission as a whole. In solidarity, Justin Cummings, Vice Mayor of the City of Santa Cruz."
Thank you.
Go, Justin.
The next statement I will read is from Dr. Arnold Leff, who is the recently retired county health officer. So he was very much in charge of the county's syringe service program until he retired. So he wrote earlier this year, and he wrote this earlier this year and told us we should use it again as his statement this time. Leff writes, "The Harm Reduction Coalition of Santa Cruz County has been meeting on a regular basis and has, under the Santa Cruz County Syringe Services Program, been providing syringes to those who have been unable to come to the county's program at the Emmeline and Watsonville locations. As the Board of Supervisors has limited some of the activities of the county program, the Harm Reduction Coalition of Santa Cruz County has been providing an unmet need. As County Health Officer, I approve the Coalition's activities and will be working in tandem with the Coalition should they get approval of their program. As I'm sure you are aware, there are a significant number of injecting substance users in Santa Cruz County, and getting enough syringes to all who inject is a daunting task, one which would be aided by approving this application." The next statement is on my phone, and it's from wonderful City Councilwoman Sandy Brown. And this will be the last statement before I pass it off. Sandy says, "I believe that harm reduction policies and practices are critical to addressing the crisis of addiction that we face locally and nationwide. Harm reduction strategies are evidence-based and compassionate. They have a demonstrable positive effect in communities they have been adopted in. The harm reduction approach involves well-managed syringe exchange and overdose prevention programs, which are shown to reduce the spread of disease, deaths by overdose, needle litter, and assist people in finding and accessing treatment. I believe these programs should be pursued at the same time that we work to address the root causes of addiction and increase supportive services for people seeking treatment. The Harm Reduction Coalition of Santa Cruz County is proposing a program that can complement the county's syringe exchange program. I support their application to run a certified syringe exchange program, and I support their mission as a whole." Councilwoman Sandy Brown. All right, I'm going to pass it off to Kate now. Thank you all so much.
Hey, guys.
Hi, Kate.
Out my statement here.
Thank you, Kate.
Okay, hi, my name is Kate Garrett. I'm also a volunteer with the Harm Reduction Coalition of Santa Cruz County, and I'm going to read my little statement here. Hello to our supporters. Thank you so much for being here today. Seeing our community come out and stand strong with us is just infinitely inspiring to me, and it's really revitalizing to our work. I'm a believer in community. And I'm a believer in the idea that we stand stronger when we all stand together than when we're isolated from each other. I believe that the health of the community is my health. And I believe that if one person is sick, then we're all sick. If one person is suffering, then we're all suffering. Growing up in this community, I saw and felt so much suffering. there are many times in my life and in my experience as a drug user that I wish there had been someone there to make me feel seen and accepted. That's why I joined the Harm Reduction Coalition, because to me, harm reduction means being there for every person in our society and holding them up, especially those who are so often neglected and abused and displaced. It's why I work in mental health, and I believe that harm reduction is a mental health issue. Unequivocally, I'll repeat that, harm reduction is a mental health issue.
Yep.
So often, the people we label and stigmatize as addicts are people who have been abandoned by the mental health system and have turned to self-medication to cope. People who have to deal with the trauma and violence of being an unhoused or low-income person in this county. So many of the people that I work with have substance use issues. More than half of people with mental health diagnoses are also diagnosed with a substance use disorder. This is especially true of youth with mental health issues. Harm reduction is for helping those people to reclaim their bodily autonomy and to choose to use safely and to educate others to use safely. Community-based programs reach those who may be fearful of the medical system and of coercive treatment. Our program is a vehicle to reach those people and to support them in getting into the system of care if they so choose. I've met people through doing syringe services that I've helped get into the county mental health system, and all that was needed was a person to meet them where they were and to offer them support. People who use a syringe program are 5 times more likely to enter drug treatment. It offers a non-judgmental approach that allows people to be in control, take what they need, and be responsible about their use. A massive part of harm reduction services is overdose education and naloxone distribution. The Harm Reduction Coalition has been doing this from day one. Naloxone, if you don't know what it is a life-saving opiate overdose reversal drug. Becoming licensed through the Department of Health will enable us to expand our overdose education and naloxone distribution outreach to greater heights than ever before. We have also been taking advantage of the Department of Health's naloxone distribution project, which is an amazing project, to receive free shipments of naloxone. Our goal is for every opiate user and their loved ones to be carrying naloxone and to be trained in its use. We provide naloxone at our fixed mobile site through home delivery and through street outreach. I personally have used naloxone to save a life, and I have known lives that could have been saved if only someone were carrying naloxone. Last year in this county, we lost 23 lives to overdose. And in my opinion, those 23 deaths could have been prevented if only someone near them had been carrying naloxone. The widespread distribution of naloxone is proven unequivocally to reduce overdose rates, and our organization is committed to working as hard as possible to change that number to zero. I'm incredibly excited for this next step for our organization and the opportunity to continue improving our community in greater ways. Every user should have a clean needle every single time they use.
Right.
They should always have access to naloxone. They should always have a place to get support and education. Official recognition through the Department of Health is an amazing opportunity for our organization to make sure those things happen. We can have healthy, thriving communities if we uplift each other and consider every person to be someone with value who contributes positively. If we take the time to listen to each other speak and to value what we say, the world can change. Thank you. And I'll be introducing our guest speakers that we have. Our first speaker is going to be Richard Smith.
My notes out too. Thank you so much for all being here. And can you hear me okay? Oh, better? Okay. So, working with the Santa Cruz AIDS Project doing a street harm reduction in the 80s, we began to pay attention to the people that we were attempting to bring what we thought were what they needed. And when we asked them what we could do to further actually ask them what they needed, the one thing that we heard over and over was clean syringes. Okay, that was a difficult thing to imagine in those days because you needed a doctor's prescription in order to get those syringes. So we began handing them out. And what we discovered at that point was that for once, finally, the people felt that they were really being included, that they were being part of this larger circle. It wasn't just somebody coming in handing something out that we thought that they needed. It was what they'd actually asked for. And at that point, they became part of our team. They became outreach workers. They became people that when they went back to their own peers owned to drug using communities, they would speak up about, hey, you know, you can go here or there and become, you can actually get some clean syringes. The other thing that they started doing at that point was they're going, wow, let's pick this shit up and put it in a safe place. They became responsible. They were paying it forward again for what they felt that they were being included in, which was reducing the danger of disease in their community. What we found was that was like a first step. And when you take that first step, you suddenly go, gosh, there's other things available here too. What about taking care of this abscess that's on my arm? I could be connected with the county and get some nursing care for that. Or, gosh, imagine, what if, is there drug treatment available? Imagine. So what we found was that we were actually giving a viable bridge that allowed people to step forward at their own pace into perhaps choosing to be a bit healthier, whatever that entailed. As we went on performing in this manner, we also discovered something else, which was these people that we were reaching out to, you know, that looks a lot like my uncle that's out there, or my friend's mother, or somebody else's daughter, is the people that we're attempting to do to increase the safety in their life. This, I think, becomes the larger purpose of where we're at. We're all family. We care for each other. That's what this is all about. And this is our chance to do a better job of it. I want to just remind you of that old adage that people withdraw behind drugs for really good reasons, mainly to reduce their grief, to reduce the power of the pain that they're feeling for one thing or another. And without our being in their shoes, we don't know exactly what that pain is, but we know that it's real. We know that what they're seeking is some relief from that. And in doing that, they often draw a little circle around themselves and just kind of withdraw. I think when we reach out, like what is being talked about here today, we draw a larger circle that chooses to include them and go, you know what, we're all in this together. Thank you so much for all being part of it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Richard. That was incredible. Our next speaker is going to be Kristen O'Connor.
Yay, Kristen.
My name is Kristen O'Connor, and I'm a registered nurse at a Santa Cruz Family Health Center here in Santa Cruz that treats opioid use disorder and substance use disorder and addiction as a chronic disease. I know and I have seen patients coming in off the streets in hopeless situations who start medication treatment and they're able to regain their lives back. They're able to reconnect with their families and loved ones and go back to work and address other health issues. They tell me while they were using IV drugs, they were living in despair and they were too ashamed to reach out. As a nurse, I know addiction is a brain disease. And when it is untreated, patients will repeatedly use despite bad consequences. This is why it is so important to engage patients at every level of their disease. The ones that aren't in treatment are somebody's loved ones, and they have family members that are hoping and praying that they are getting better. Unlike other chronic medical conditions, symptoms for substance use disorder adversely affect families and communities, and symptoms can lead to difficulty accessing care, which keeps people isolated. This contributes to the stigma associated with the disease. Patients feel too ashamed and fearful to get treatment. We are in the midst of an opioid overdose epidemic. There were 83 overdoses treated in Santa Cruz County Emergency Departments last year. You cannot treat somebody who is not alive. And it is also said a dead person cannot recover. And that is why harm reduction is so critical. Harm reduction is an opportunity to give somebody hope, to bring them out of the shadows, to offer them compassion and respect, and to keep people safe until they are able to recover and can access treatment. Harm reduction needle exchange saves lives. This is a fact. It is evidence-based. It is the standard of care. It has been shown to decrease overdoses, which will keep somebody's mother, son, loved one alive and give them the chance to get better. Thank you.
Thank you so much to Kristen. We are so thankful to have the support of medical professionals of our community. They support it, of course. Our next speaker is going to be Jules Hodge.
Hi, everyone. My name is Jules Hodge, and I'm the president of Students for Sensible Drug Policy up at UC Santa Cruz. My group aims to end the harm caused by the war on drugs. So we were all excited to see the Harm Reduction Coalition's new application to open a syringe exchange site in the city. It's easy to find data that shows how effective these sites are in reducing the transmission of HIV, hepatitis C, and other bloodborne pathogens. They reduce the number of overdoses in the community and increase the number of injection drug users who enter rehabilitation services. In one study of injection drug users in Seattle.
Louder.
Louder?
Yeah. Just talk louder.
All right. In one study of injection drug users in Seattle, they saw that the people who used these programs were 5 times more likely to enter rehabilitation services than non-exchangers, and they saw the HIV transmission rate cut in half. These results are fantastic, and they give those with problematic drug use a chance to be safer with their drug use so they can live to recover another day. From my few experiences volunteering at a pop-up syringe exchange site here in Santa Cruz with the Harm Reduction Coalition, it's easy to see how much Denise and Danny and all the other volunteers care about the community and how dedicated they are to helping injection drug users be safe. It's because of all of this that I offer my full-fledged support to the Harm Reduction Coalition and their new application to open a syringe exchange site in Santa Cruz.
Thank you so much to Jules, and now I'm going to introduce our final speaker, Dr. Jen Hastings. Wonderful to see you all here. This is so important. So I want us to all take a deep breath. We're in the middle of an epidemic. We have very vocal people in our community who do not understand the importance of what this work is of our Harm Reduction Coalition. And fear and stigma are driving their opposition to very logical, scientifically proven, evidence-based measures where you have a volunteer, all-volunteer, collaborative group willing to step up and improve the quality of life in our community. I am afraid right now. I am afraid because there is a very vocal opposition that is not based in evidence, but is based in fear. And so I am calling right now for the medical providers of our community to step forward. We need to step forward in the face of fear, prejudice, stigma, and ultimately a death sentence to many people in our community. We do not need to have a repeat of Scotts County, Indiana, where there were 200 new HIV acquisitions because there was not syringe exchange. Syringe exchange does not increase the use of drugs. Instead, it saves lives and brings access to recovery if the person is ready. You cannot force someone into recovery. You cannot jail someone into recovery. We need to follow the practices of other countries, France and Portugal, where people who are using drugs are brought treatment and love and compassion and support. Please, Santa Cruz County, step up and be and do the right thing, not fear-based. We are better than what is happening right now. And I know we're a small group, we're a big group right now, but we're a modest group. So, you see up here these words of what we stand for. I'm going to read each one of them, and you're going to shout it with all your heart. We need to open hearts right now. Okay. Hearts and minds to do the right thing. This is not a joke. Dignity.
Dignity.
Compassion.
Compassion.
Acceptance.
Acceptance.
Non-judgment.
Non-judgment.
Non-coercing.
Non-coercing.
Connection.
Connection.
We celebrate positive change.
Celebrate positive change.
And we stand for wellness.
Wellness.
And respect.
Respect.
Please. So I see Stacy Kirkhart there from the Santa Cruz Community Health Centers. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And will you agree with me that we are going to make a difference here? We're going to step forward. All the physicians, nurse practitioners, physician assistants, nurse practitioners, people with public health degrees, people who have education, we're going to step forward and do our county right. Thank you.
And now another musical break with Epona Star by Kevin Robinson.
Stand before me, they're holding dreams high as the trees. A lot of people standing before me, reach to a future without an ending. Gliding upon a star, free from any kind of war. That's where we'll find a way, pulling our wings and soar. That's what we came in for.
To make a little closing statement, and then Danny and I are going to open it up for questions, but before that we're going to try to kind of smush everybody together and take a couple pictures.
Now, if you come back here, let's just get like a little shade.
tight spot right here, get the sides.
Yeah, if everyone can kind of just smush, you know, we can show. There's a lot of people here. I know we're all spread out, but a lot of people turned up and supported this, and that's incredible and amazing. Yeah, everyone get in. Okay. Can you take some pictures while I finish this? All right.
I feel like I'm missing my tracksuit.
Okay. Jeremy,
you
want to
come up here?
Yeah.
Thank you. No, it's okay. It's all right.
Something.
Start somewhere.
All right, everybody, right here. 1, 2, 3.
Awesome. Love how these signs are super cute. Yeah. All right. Thank you so much to our wonderful speakers. Can we just get another round of applause for all those incredible speakers?
Yeah.
Thank you for lending your voices in support of this organization. We're so grateful for the support that our community has shown us, and we're excited to keep incorporating your thoughts into our plans for the future. Harm reduction works, community-based programs work. We will continue to make our community safer and healthier. We are supported by local officials, health professionals, moms, students, neighbors, people believe in harm reduction. We feel confident our application process will be smooth and we will be even more successful with the work we've been doing for the past 18 months. Thank you so much for all the people who have turned out to hear us speak. At this time, Danny and I will be opening up the space to take questions from the media and audience regarding our application and organization.
Repeat the question. Nick Ibarra from the Santa Cruz Sentinel asked for more detail about why we withdrew the application last time and what's different this time. I think what I said earlier is still true, that we withdrew it to make sure we can incorporate community feedback better. And what that means is, you know, not doing the locations in Felton and Watsonville, honestly, like doing the home delivery instead. It gave us an opportunity to work with our allies in those areas so we could find locations that work for everyone there and don't create the kind of stirring that we created earlier this year. And also, it was, you know, we're volunteers here, and first and foremost, we're committed to doing good harm reduction service work. We are not, you know, politicians. Some of us are organizers, but that's not what we're spending our time on, right? The political and the media side of things. So honestly, this time around, we're just spending a lot more energy doing that, and I think that's a really big difference this time around.
Is that the only difference? Is that fair to say? Are there other differences?
So the locations and the addition of home delivery are the big difference in what's written. We want to reaffirm, and we put it in this application. It wasn't in the last application, but we're affirming that we'll never do syringe services in a city or county park. So that's written in there. And we'll keep disposing lots and lots of syringes. That was in the last application, but I think people missed it.
Yeah, I don't.
And to me, that sounds kind of like a sellout. The fear that in places where it might be comfortable for people to receive syringe exchange, like a city or county park, why are these areas suddenly excluded from that service? I guess the usual excuse would be, oh, the children, as though this isn't a pharmaceutical and a medical need. And I don't know what the hours are of the harm reduction services, but I find myself concerned when the liberals retreat and the reactionaries advance. And trying to celebrate a retreat as some kind of an advance is misleading.
I guess what I would say is we have been incorporating more feedback, talking with elected officials, talking with our community, and as well as we were already doing this before, but I would say this time around we have been greatly expanding our overdose education and naloxone distribution, which is a very important issue in this county, and so we are expanding those services as well.
And so it has that expansion of outreach persuaded them that these locations are bad locations in the city and county parks? If so, why? Come on, let's come clean here. Is it because you're nervous about bigoted groups coming after you and criticizing you for doing things that need to be done? If so, let's acknowledge our timidity. Let's acknowledge our anxiety and then see what can be done rather than put nice labels on it, paint a pretty picture around it, fluff a nice facade over it.
Jake Pearson, the Sentinel. And what would be the consequences, do you think, if that this wasn't approved, if your application wasn't approved and you weren't allowed to do this program?
Well, we expect to be approved, is what I'll say. The question is, if we weren't to be approved, what would the consequences be of that? And we are expecting approval. We've been working very closely with the Department of Health on this application. We've been working with the county on this application. We have their full support. And even if it should, for some reason, get rejected, we would continue to offer services as a secondary exchange.
Can I just say, increase HIV risk of HIV and Hep C acquisition, increased risk of death to people in our community. That's the consequence.
Absolutely. And would they continue to provide services if necessary in city and county parks if the it's rejected? Are they currently providing those services there, or have they pulled in their horns as Needle Exchange was destroyed in Santa Cruz by a backroom deal by City Council in 2013 when the Lower Ocean Needle distribution area was eliminated? Don't know.
The second time.
Yes.
That's what I was going to say. Jen got more death, more disease, less people feeling connected to the places they're getting service from.
And just another question. I'm wondering if you can kind of reiterate, your group has explained this before, but why the application is so important. What it will allow you to do. So I know there's something about going directly to the supplier. Just explain what this would allow you to do if you got the application.
Going straight to the supplier is a thing. So the application certifies us to get harm reduction supplies of all kinds, not just syringes, but lots of other things, directly from the clearinghouse, which operates out of Washington State, and California Department of Public Health would pay for those supplies. Right now we get them from the county. We operate, under the county because of that, and this would end that relationship of supply, right? So we'd be getting it straight from the state. It would also just mean more direct supervision from the California Department of Public Health. We'd be reporting our numbers directly to them. We already do, but we would be required to.
And I'd be curious to know what the implications of that would be. Whether there are more severe restrictions on the state than there are by the county, I suspect not, but I don't know.
Any questions from the audience?
So how do you volunteer?
How do you volunteer? Are you on our email list?
Probably. I heard about this meeting.
We've been sending out a volunteer form in our email list. Who here is not on our email list? Who here has a notepad? Should have set this up ahead of time. Can any of you wonderful organizers donate a notepad to collect some emails before we leave here?
I'll get a notepad.
Thank you so much. If you get on that email list, we will send up a follow-up email about this press conference. We routinely send out our volunteer form there, and it has all of the different ways you can plug into the work. As soon as you fill it out, myself or Kate or Denise or one of us will reach out to you and connect you with the work.
One other thing I'd say is that there's a lot of opportunities for volunteering that aren't necessarily working at the exchange. If for whatever reason you have some kind of hang-ups about that, you can work with us to do naloxone distribution. You can help us with writing letters to the editor and op-eds for harm reduction, and you can help us with flyering. You can help us with our hotline. So there's really varied opportunities, whatever you are particularly interested in.
Volunteer.
Does anyone else have any other questions? No? Okay. Thank you guys so much for turning out to support us. This has been an incredible event.
Thank you.
Is there anything else you want to say, Danny?
Yes. Also, thank you again. Our friend here just got a pad to get the emails. Also, if you do not carry naloxone and you are somebody who might ever be around an opioid overdose for any reason, you don't have to tell us the reason, we have naloxone here. We can train you on how to use naloxone, and you could save a life. So please take some with you if you're going to be around that. Thanks. Bye, everybody.
And I believe the harm reduction folks show up at the Food Not Bombs meal on Saturday from 4 to 6, or they have several times. So you may be able to find them there at the main post office. I've tried to get together a debate between those who are adamantly opposed to increased needle exchange, other than in a very rigid one-to-one, very limited, not-in-our-backyard kind of approach, as often represented by some of the, what I call, needle shakers at the Santa Cruz City Council, and with people from this group, or people who are supportive of a broader needle exchange. I haven't been able to do that because I think that what's really needed is a real examination of opposing claims back and forth, which involves examining data and comparing data in different cities. You might say, well, that's a matter for painstaking research. But I think that kind of stuff can be summarized, and there can be discussion back and forth in ways that contrast why people come to different conclusions on these issues, and people then can make up their own minds. I, of course, have made up my mind. I'm on one side. I'm on the needle exchange, broad expansion of harm reduction, as well as just the general principle of decriminalization of drugs and ramping down of unnecessary and toxic multiplication and militarization of police services. But I'm always open to the other arguments. I'd like to hear them. I'd like to hear a real exchange, and who knows, maybe someday I will or might be able to create such a thing.